Well, that brings us to the end of the Habitat Management Division's section of the agenda. Chief O'Reilly, is there anything we can address in fisheries prior to the noon hour?
If I had to pick, I would pick the discussion of the blue crab winter dredge study results. The reason I say that is the Crab Management Advisory Committee has also seen those results. They were presented to them. They have them. And I don't know whether anyone in the public intended to attend today just to see those results. I think the other items, there's a public hearing which is advertised to take place noon, no earlier than noon. And then we have two requests for an emergency amendment. And I know, Commissioner, even though they're not public hearings, you usually ask if anyone has any comments. So I think if we're going to have one public hearing, we might as well have the two requests for emergency amendments after lunch as well. And so that's what leads me to the blue crab survey results.
I think that's right. This has been advertised. Well, this discussion has been advertised on our website with the agenda. The winter dredge survey results have been promulgated far and wide. There's a press release that's been issued. It's been in the newspaper, the blurbs on our website. Folks know who care to know what the results are. I think we can go ahead and do this briefing here on the nuances of all this here before the lunch hour.
Thank you. Right. Now, the commission has seen these results in the past, and keep in mind that when you look at the furthest left-hand column, that is the end year of the survey. So the survey takes place from roughly from December 15th through March 15th. So it wraps around two calendar years. So if it says 1990, it means that's when the survey was complete in March. It started in 1989. To really feel old today, I was on the shakeout cruise in 1989 before they started that. So I have gained some age and time. The other information, all crabs means just that. It's all sizes of crabs, males and females, everything together. Juveniles is also male and females, but these are the crabs that are less than 2.4 inches in carapace width or 60 millimeters. And that's a cutoff point. So anything larger than that becomes a what's called an age 1+ crab. And in the case of spawning females, those are also age 1+. But the spawning means that those female crabs will spawn in late May as a peak, a larger peak in July, August. If you look at the literature, they typically spawn from May to October, but those are the two peak periods. And they have been overwintering, and that's why, depending on where they are geographically in the bay through their overwintering, the timing of whether they spawn in late May or they spawn later in the summer. Spawning male, the same situation. The bay-wide harvest is included here, and again, I think one of the things to keep in mind, this is all jurisdictions. This is Potomac River Fisheries Commission, Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and the VMRC together. And if you look at the removal rate here, that is based on female crabs from the smallest up to the largest. So it's all female crabs. And we're going to go over these in figures, but I did want to present this table. And if you look at the bottom, there's a percent change, which is just relative to the last survey that ended in 2016. So you can see if you go through the bottom row, there's about an 18% decline in the total amount of crabs, almost a 54% decline in juvenile crabs, about a 31% increase in the spawning females, a 16% decline in the males. The harvest went up 20.5%, but look here, this is for 2016. So 2017 is in progress. The last harvest information we have is for 2016. So compared to 2015, that was about a 21% increase. The exploitation rate or removal rate or harvest rate increased by 8% compared to 2015. So we won't have an exploitation rate for 2017 until we complete that harvest year. So this will show you the total abundance in a figure, and you can see right here the last data point, 2017. You can see that there was an increase. If you remember about 2014, that was a time right here when the female portion of the stock was depleted. But there were some increases, and in a way, when you look at these figures, I think what you'll notice from 1998 to about 2007 or 2008 was really a low point for this stock. And it was also a time when this stock was associated with quite a bit of overfishing in those years. The situation for the commission and the other jurisdictions was we really didn't have sound science to go by. We're trying our best here at the commission and the other agencies to figure out the best way to help conserve crabs and promote spawning potential. But we didn't have a solid stock assessment until about late 2005, and that was improved in 2011. So the science had to catch up with everything. If you look here on the juveniles, you can see the low point here. Yes, there are other low points, which I'll point to when I go back to the table in a few minutes. And one thing about the juvenile stock is that the winter dredge does not get too shallow when it does the collection of juvenile crabs. Juvenile crabs may be situated more so in the shallow areas one year than another year. What we've discovered as we go through this process, there's been some information that in Virginia, that is more pronounced. As you get further up into the system, there's less times where the juvenile crabs are that variable. So that's something that actually is being explored, not only here, but by the jurisdictions. If you look at the abundance of age 1 plus female crabs, what you're seeing here with the 254 million spawning age female crabs is that it's the high point. So in 28 survey years, this is the highest point. We have to look back a little bit to the target of 215 million female crabs, a target where every manager wants to see that abundance. It hasn't happened 2 years in a row yet. 2010, which you can see here, was pretty close to what the 2017 abundance is. So this is part of the output of the stock assessment that was done in 2011. The line in the sand is this red line, where if you're below 70 million crabs, it says there's depletion of the stock. Fortunately for blue crab, they're very resilient, and they can bounce back. The stock bounces back very quickly. As you can see, after 2014, that certainly was the case for the female crabs. In 2014, the agencies got together in the bay and decided they'd have a 10% reduction of harvest. That could help with a little stimulating of the rebound, but at the same time, a lot of this owes to the recruitment or how many juveniles come in, depending on coming back from the ocean, the currents, the wind, other factors that entrain them back into the bay. Here's a different situation. This is the removal rate, and what we see here is really from 2008 on, the removal rate has been below the target and well below the threshold. The last time it was above the threshold was 2007. The way that staff looks at this, even with the other jurisdictions, in talking to the other jurisdictions, is that this does give you a sense of a trend, because admittedly, there were some pretty high removal rates in the past. How accurate they are depends on how you look at the data. One problem with the removal rate is that since 2011, each year to figure out what the removal rate is, your denominator becomes 0.4, because at that time through 2009 in the 2011 stock assessment, it was determined that only 40% of the juveniles could be collected by the winter dredge survey. So everything gets scaled up. That's a bit of a situation that everyone is interested in among the bay jurisdictions, because everyone knows that that 40% doesn't hold each year. The other problem with the exploitation rate or removal rate is typically it's catch that you're looking at as a measure of the removal rate and how it relates to the exploitation rate and the average abundance as of January 1. So it's catch. And catch is really not just harvest, it's also dead discards. And we really do not have dead discards configured into the removal rate. So, for example, you're familiar with striped bass. Striped bass or any other finfish assessment that's done through the ASMFC, they have some amount of dead discards. For the recreational fishery for striped bass, it's 9% of everything that's released is considered a dead discard. And other finfish species, they're the same. We're not there with blue crabs yet. There has been some work done on discard rates by the Chesapeake Trust, which is an organization in the Bay that allows these type of studies. But Tom Miller, who's with the Chesapeake Biological Laboratory, simply said to us a year and a half ago, there's not enough information for us to put it in an analytical model. So there are some caveats about the exploitation rate. At the same time, I think the trend is encouraging. And it used to be up until 2011 that we had the exploitation rate on males and females combined. So that changed in 2011. This is the age one male abundance. One good note is this low point, which was about 25 million male crabs, age one plus, meaning they were greater than 60 millimeters or greater than 2.4 inches. There has been an upturn from that, and really there is no similar biological reference points, a target and a threshold for males, but there is a convention that's used by the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee to make sure that there are certain boundaries that if the boundaries are exceeded, they are looked at. So males have been questioned by us and by other agencies to make sure that even though the female crab is considered most important for exploitation, in the same way, male crabs are important as well. This looks at the Baywide harvest, and you can see in 2016, Virginia's here. We were very close to, we'll end up very close to 30 million pounds. Frankly, this is still a little bit preliminary. We do have delinquent data. I'm happy to say we have much less delinquent data than we had if you go back 4 or 5 years even from now. So that's a good thing. We'll be close to 29 million to 30 million pounds altogether with peeler crabs and with hard crabs. You can see Maryland here. And you can see through time the Potomac River itself is a somewhat of a smaller contribution. If it's more than 2 million pounds, that's a pretty good year for the Potomac River. So that's just the harvest information. This you have to look at twice, and I did not produce this, but a fellow named Glenn Davis from the Maryland Department of Natural Resources puts this information together. He's a really hard-working man who has helped out for many years in the Bay. And what you look at here is you have the Maryland landings here, but you have the percentages of the Bay up here. So if you follow this blue line, it's looking at the female harvest, and the percentage is about 27%. If you look at Virginia through 2016, Virginia's about 70%, and there's a small contribution from the Potomac River. So these are really the trend lines to look at over time. And what you can see here is that there's been a slight downturn for Maryland, a slight uptick for Virginia in terms of the female harvest through 2016. You can also look back to see that the trend has been increasing in Virginia. If you look at the male harvest, Virginia is in blue and Maryland is in red, and Virginia has Had some years where it did increase through 2014, but then it comes back down to where it's just a little above the average trend line. If you drew a trend line, it might be something like that. So we are above the trend line for male harvest. There's some stability the last 2 years in Maryland. Generally, I saw something the other day where Maryland talked about how they used to be about 23%, 24% of the female harvest, and they have increased from there to some extent. Our male harvest overall has increased a little bit too. The last figure shows the blue crab harvest in pounds and the first sale or dockside value adjusted to the consumer price index of 2016. And this is about $40 million, which when I saw this, I thought, well, that's a pretty big jump. But at the same time, the value has increased. So if you look back to 2013, which I think would be right about here, if you talk to the harvesters, it was a fairly low harvest time down here, is 2013, but the value was much greater than it had been in previous years. I think it was about $1.24 or somewhere in that range that it really bumped up. The other thing I want to tell you about the value is we don't have mandatory reporting of value of the economic. That was a decision made a long time back when mandatory reporting was started in 1993. And we are lucky that we do have some buyers who are kind enough to submit information on the economics, but not a lot of them. And, of course, in time, that's become more important to know about as well. And it's also important for anyone such as the late Dr. Kirkley from VIMS did some economic studies. He did two back, I think the first one was 2004, and then one before that followed after that. So it's important to the economic profile. So I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to go back, if I'm successful, which I think I can do today, and I think what staff wants to explore is the juvenile abundance for your May meeting. There'll be lots of other information. This is just about, principally about the survey. And it's been a good survey that VIMS and Maryland DNR have been successful with for many, many years, 28 seasons. So we'll have more information about our particular harvest and everything else, catch per unit effort, other figures that you've seen in the past, but we'll also come back to this a little bit because if you look at the juveniles and just follow down, you know, we're sitting at 125 million is the estimate. There's 165, 155, 143, 111, and it goes on, 111. There are some of these that are worth investigating to see what happened with low juvenile abundance. So, for example, juveniles do recruit to the fisheries from August on, so that they really are a situation where they not only recruit to the fisheries this late summer and fall, they are also our and the bay's next year spawning stock. So they're the 2018 spawning stock. So they need to be looked at, and in particular what staff will do is look at these lower points. You can't go back too far before about 2007 because the effort was much different. We didn't have the science. We didn't know we were overfishing, quite frankly. So we could see and we could check what the harvest would be. So if you go across here, it's 43 million pounds, which is not a banner harvest year for the bay. The average over time is probably 65 million pounds. If you take another one here, it's down to 36 million. We need to find out if that was the late summer fall or was some of that the spring months. Staff's collected some data this week from all the jurisdictions, and we'll also get it by month to explore this because I think it's sort of a straightforward approach to give the commission advice because we do want to make sure that there are some trends there. If they're not trends, it should ease the concern a little bit about the 2018 spawning stock, which is sitting right here right now. So that will be done. The other things that need to be done are there will be a May 17th CMAC meeting, Blue Crab Management Advisory Committee meeting, and the chair, Mrs. Kellum, I talked to her today, so we set that meeting. We'll send that out to the harvesters. The other part of that is, which I mentioned earlier, they have these results, so we certainly can talk about these results and get their perspective at the meeting, which I think is a better approach than we've done in the past. In the past, as soon as the results have come out and the press releases, CMAC is here, and it's not a very good meeting because they haven't had time to digest the information. So we'll have that on May 17th. May 23rd, we'll return to the commission for asking the commission for a public hearing. In the meantime, we'll look at the regulations that affect the blue crab fishery. The principal one is Chapter 270. That has a lot of information in there. You'll have a chance to look at things such as where the seasons have been. This year, for example, we started March 1. Every other year, back to 2007, we started March 17th. Before 2007, going all the way back to 1996, we started April 1. We've had three events now where we've had extended seasons in 2012 and 13, and this year, 2012 and 13, we went out to the 15th of December. This year we went out to the 20th of December. So there will be very many choices that the commission can look at, and staff's going to provide you with as much guidance as we possibly can. So I think that's the presentation, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chief. Let me see if I can sum this up. Over the last 3 years, since we hit that depleted female status in 2014, fundus is up 50%, the harvest is up 70%, the dockside value is up, and now we hit the largest spawning age female level ever recorded in the history of the winter dredge survey. That's a testament to the work that you all have done. No ifs, ands, or buts about that.
I think I may add one thing which I was neglectful about, which is this has not been a blowing season in Virginia for blue crab harvest, and I think some of you know that. The combination of the lack of picking houses, which goes on now, we just don't have the infrastructure that we had, and we do have female crabs as our, you know, 68% to 71% of what's harvested. The other part is the prices really didn't hold up, and to the point where harvesters have to stop for a while, they have to find other things to do. I think some areas they plod on. There was also information which I hadn't heard since 1995 where there was some discussion, but it didn't get very far, about if the bushel limits could be set much lower right now going into the late spring, early summer. But there was just a little talk about that. And that's come up in the past, as I said, as well. So when you talk about economics, Commissioner, I think there's two prongs to that.
Yeah, there's two ways of looking at that.
Yes. Yep. Thank you.
I'm not willing to say that everything is rosy out there for the harvesters, right. But
yes,
we're
sir.
Certainly in better shape than we were just 3 years ago.
Yes.
And I would say, personally, I would be entirely, totally heartened about all this, except if it was for that juvenile number. Because that tells us what we're looking at this fall and next spring, and those babies are next year's mamas. So we still got some work to do. So that's my quick snapshot perspective.
That's good. We have a commissioner that rolls up his sleeves and gets involved with this, by the way, so I commend you for that, because that's been going on for several years.
So what's the board think? What y'all want to do here as far as the next steps? Mr. Erskine.
I just have a question, Rob. And help me, remind me, I guess, when harvest was very low, and I'm going back a number of years,
sure.
The jurisdictions came together and there was an agreement made between the jurisdictions to reduce the female harvest by a certain percent, 34%, thank you.
34% in 2008.
Okay, thank you. So let me see if I can follow this. The percentage of females removed from the bay is driven by Virginia. Virginia removes the majority of females, if that's what I understood here with your information. And conversely, Maryland removes majority male crabs. Then the data shows that for age one, abundance of male crabs is in a down tick. Is that right?
It was through 2014, and you can see it here, 29 million. It then went up a little bit, it then went up quite a bit, and then it flattened out a bit to 76 million. So right now, if you scan through here, other than these early years, it's very similar to where it's been. It's not at a situation where it would raise a red flag or anything. And it does become difficult. One thing I mentioned is it becomes difficult to go back before 2007 because along with the 34% reduction in females in 2000, which still persists today, the management measures that were put in place in 2008 essentially are there. They've been modified a little bit here and there, but essentially they're there. The other thing is we had the disaster relief in 2008 where Maryland and Virginia National Marine Fisheries Service provided $15.1 million, which went towards work efforts, some of which are still working today, thank goodness. So there was a lot going on. But 2004 to 2007 was the area that was considered to promote the disaster. And really, 2007, 43 million pounds. If you look back in time, when there was more effort, granted, back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s, Virginia used to harvest alone 45 million pounds on average. So a lot of things have changed. And really, a lot of things have changed with the harvest since this survey started.
I'm still kind of getting to my point, I guess. And I appreciate that. And there's a lot that's happened in the last 9 years. I understand that. But it seems like back then in 2008, there was 34% reduction of females, and let's face it, Virginia took the majority of that. Now, you know, we're talking about there's a lower abundance of males, and do you think the jurisdictions would get together and have a reduction in the male harvest? Maybe not 34%, but that there would be a reduction in the male harvest, if warranted, to conserve and increase the population of males?
Well, there's two things to look at. One, yes, Virginia has more females. Maryland has less. But if you take the same amount from each, you're extracting proportionally the same amount from each jurisdiction and from the Potomac as well. So because Virginia has 68 to 71% female crabs composition, when the 34% reduction happened, everyone got truncated. All the jurisdiction got truncated. Bushel limits went on in Maryland. They're still there. So now on the male question specifically, next meeting, I did not bring that, but we could show you the danger zone for males. In other words, the Chesapeake Bay Stock Assessment Committee has built a situation similar to biological reference points, but not quite, where you can look at males. They have been in a problem area once or twice in the past, but not in recent years. The reason that CBSAC did not go to the extent, although in 1995 the original request for an assessment was to have male and female reference points, is because it's much too complicated. And those who are doing the modeling have said you really would put yourselves in a position where you wouldn't know which was the one to really pay the most attention to. The second part of that is when the last stock assessment was done, there was a peer review process. There were three folks from different countries who came and did the peer review. I tried to keep up with most of it. But what they found out essentially was that the female crab is the most important because of its reproductive capability. There's all sorts of side information which I'm not fluent in, but I'm aware of, about do you have to conserve enough males because of sperm limitation situations. That's gone back and forth through time, depending on who's done the research. The latest information is that no, there's not. And even some of the early information is that about 95% of the females become impregnated. And I read something yesterday which sounds kind of cavalier, but the male crabs, when they double, which you're familiar with, and then the female crab forms the shell, the hard shell again, the male crab is off looking for his next pursuit. So that's probably one reason why there's not a lot of sperm limitation. But again, we have people around the bay, such as Anson Hines, Tuck Hines, Rom Lipschitz, others who are a lot more, and even John McConaughey, who are more qualified to speak to the male situation. What I can do and what staff can do is show next time where males sit in that sort of proxy for a reference point.
Thank you.
So, thank you. Okay.
Other questions, observations, thoughts? Mr. Ballard?
Similarly, and you started to get at it there somewhat, I think it would be interesting, and I can hear the cries that we're going to hear at the public hearing already that the data is not valid, or cries of that the variability is extreme. And I do look at it and start to wonder, all right, at what point is this data really a predictor? Are we seeing correlations between the classes here? And I'm sure VIMS probably has someone on staff who's studied this and done regressions. I just think it'd be interesting to hear at the public hearing, possibly, whether there's someone that could speak to that as what are the predictors, and compared to other data sets, does this act like we would expect it to?
So what I would respond to is make sure I talk to Dr. Lipschitz and invite him for June, because what we're hoping is on May 23rd to request that the commission allow staff to advertise, and then we'll have a June 27th hearing. I don't know Dr. Lipschitz's schedule, but I'm sure he'd be happy to come. He has it many other times. The other part, I guess, is that the mindset right now is to move away from absolute data. So when these abundance data come forward, they are treated as absolute. And there are some in the jurisdictions that want to see that be sort of a relative abundance that goes into the model, not absolute abundance. But that has to be tested first. And I think that kind of test would actually be able to answer your question as well. Because there is variability. If all these are, when you see these data, they are means, or they are averages. So you know that there's some variability.
I give you the spreadsheet.
Does that help?
It's glazed over.
Yeah. Commissioner?
I guess I'm trying to assimilate there where Chad was getting to. Let me translate to so that I think I understand. The numbers are the numbers here, but that low juvenile level here, the question or concern is whether or not that requires, I'm paraphrasing what I think you said, Chad, emergency all hands on deck, or if it's just kind of, well, we can ride through this to a degree. Is that kind of where you're coming from?
Not so much, no. I was just more interested in the data set in general, and whether there's been any kind of statistical analysis on this to say this data set is performing as we would expect it to. Is it correlating to what we would assume would be kind of nature's laws? And when I see extreme variability and swings in data and 50% declines, that makes me wonder whether the data is reflective of what's truly out there, or whether we had sampling bias or some sort of error in the survey. And this data does seem to be extremely variable. I think there are people smarter than me out there that could probably address that question.
So I'll address, I'm not smarter than you, but I'll address one part of this, which is the variability here is expected. In the past, we just lived with it, because when these, when the female crab rubs off the larvae and then out they go into the ocean for weeks to, you know, even more than that, and they're at the mercy of winds, tides, currents, everything else, that's what starts our juvenile crop. The first time we see them is when they're already well advanced. I mean, the true first stage of a crab is about a fifth of an inch. So we're seeing these when they're even bigger, and we don't know what happened before then. So I used to tell the commission that we're about a 60% of the management, because the 40% we don't see is tied to environmental forcings or environmental factors.
Right.
Now, what we have done, and the commissioner started this a few years ago, was we moved the management framework. So we moved the management framework from July 5 to July 4 so that we can even see two of these results in between that management frame. And the other thing that was done was to make a concerted effort to try, despite the environmental variability, to try and pay attention to the juveniles in some fashion, because the juveniles, I wouldn't say they were ignored before, but the primary currency was the spawning female. So we've changed our mindset as well in the last few years, and I think that's helped. So I think small things, and I'm not going to put in a plug here, but small things such as, when do you start the peeler season? The peeler season is variable depending on whether you go up the bay, where you go up the bay in the tributaries. But May is typically 45% to 55% of all the peeler crabs. So should you really start a peeler season when you start a hard crab season? And we have not the last few years. We even started it May 1, 3 years ago, and then we ratcheted it down a little bit here and there. So there are ways that we can help to account for our inability to know what's coming with the next batch of recruits or juveniles. And that's where most of the variability is. But I do understand what you're asking, and you know, that will be addressed, and you'll have someone who's able to really talk more about the data. Other than my shakedown crews, I haven't really been part of that cruise, so it'd be good to have someone who's been leading that cruise here to talk to you.
I'll note that when Robert Riley talks without any fondness whatsoever of having very little to no information on the early stage of the crab life cycle here and its reproductive capacity, he takes that as a great personal affront that there's this vast group of knowledge that he doesn't, no one has. He takes it personally.
I do, and last year, Commissioner, I had one of my slides when I ended, which was a black hole. That's what the slide was, so, yeah.
Right. Pellet.
Well, I had my hand up earlier. I didn't think there were any additional questions. I was going to go ahead with a move forward, unless there are other questions.
Well, let me ask. Is there anybody else that has other questions or observations on the data here and where we're at with the winter dredge survey?
I would just make comment. Rob has already addressed my biggest thing. He's already stated that next month he'll present us with an analysis of what's happened in the past when we've had these low abundance levels of juvenile crabs and what that correlated to in our fall fisheries, the following year fisheries, and that will give us an idea of how concerned we should be at this level and what kind of stuff we should do.
Good. Thank you.
Mrs. Cullen.
I would make a motion then to move forward with the May 17th CMAQ meeting and revisit this in May to advertise for a public hearing in June, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Cullen, second by Mr. Minor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Motion passes unanimously. We have a path forward here.